Welcome to Brex in the Black. We've got our CFO here, Michael, to talk about benefits. Michael, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
So how should startups think about benefits generally, and then how does the CFO get involved?
Sure. So I think, you know, in the beginning of a startup or in a small company, there's kind of one person who manages typically benefits, HR, operations, everything. And so I'll speak from that authority, having done it a couple different times in my life. I think that benefits for, you know, look, the reality of the healthcare system in the U.S. is that it's largely employer-sponsored for people that are working. So you have Medicare, et cetera, but a lot of people, working people, expect to get healthcare from their employer. And now post the Affordable Care Act, it's sort of required. So I think when you're doing that function, whether it be finance, HR, operations, you have a responsibility to figure out benefits for employees. And specifically, what I tend to focus on is just, you know, trying to make something that people feel good about and not having it be too complicated. But benefits is not something you sort of need to purchase it from either your payroll vendor or from a broker. And so what a lot of people do is if they're using something like a Gusto or a Rippling or Zenefits, you know, a payroll administrator online, those firms offer benefits as part of their payroll package. The other option for a really small company is to find a broker, and they will help you get the insurance. But the point is, you can't just call up Anthem or United Health or Kaiser Permanente and just get and negotiate directly with them. It's an insurance, so it's only offered via a broker.
So how do you think about all those options then?
So what I'd like to do is just, so the main decisions that you're making are what percentage of the premiums is the employer covering? What are the insurers that you're offering? Like, what are the plans? Plans meaning both the carrier, so United versus United Health versus Anthem versus Cigna. And then sort of within them, what plan are you offering? It's usually platinum, gold, silver. So like sort of how rich are the benefits? How much is out of pocket? The way I think through that is, look, in the competitive environment and war for talent that we're in today, there's sort of an expectation, at least within tech, that 100% of premiums are covered, that employees aren't paying anything out of cost. I think you could probably get away with covering 80%, but it's definitely something that people care about. It's a lot of people in the recruiting process will ask about benefits. I don't know why people don't. I mean, look, so people get sick and stuff, but a lot of times, you know, it people end up probably spending more time caring about it than they actually do using it. So I tend to be in favor of offering 100%. I tend to be in favor of not necessarily offering 100% for dependents. So that means is if someone has a spouse or a domestic partner or a child, I don't think it's necessarily market or required that you offer 100% there, but maybe there is where you go more like 80. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind that people that are working at big non-tech companies, like I worked at JP Morgan out of college, those companies do not pay 100% of premium. So it's a little bit of a tech concept that 100%. So it depends on where you're pulling people from. If you're pulling people from Google and Facebook, their expectation is 100%. If you're pulling people from kind of broad, big corporate companies, they may not expect that.
And what would they expect? Also around the 80%?
More like 80%, yeah. So a modest out-of-pocket. I mean, there's definitely some people who are of the mind that you should make people pay a little bit so they care. If what you get for nothing is worth nothing is sort of a phrase that your parents might say. Sort of true. And so I can understand trying to get people to pay a little bit. You just might get pushback. And then there's my advice also would be pick one plan or two plans, but no more. Giving people lots of more options is worse.
Overwhelming.
It's just, you know, they're all kind of, if you're in a major metropolitan area, they're all kind of the same. They got a lot of doctors. Pick something that seems reasonable, move on. Don't make it a big thing. There's always going to be some annoying person in the organization that's trying to make a thing out of it. Ignore that person. Simplify.
And is there any, between all the big plans, is there any real differentiator? You just look at them all and see what looks best?
Yeah, I mean, There's not between in a like again in a major metropolitan area. Just make sure that the big hospital systems are included in the plan. So you know whatever they are, you want to make sure that most of the major hospital systems have that plan. And I think the other thing that I would focus on a little bit is just making sure the administration is easy. That's the pro of working with one of the software vendors because remember, part of this, it's very tied to payroll. So as you add an employee, you add them to payroll, you add them to benefits. If you are taking deductions from them for dependents, that's done through payroll, right? If they're making a contribution to the insurance because they have a kid or a spouse that's on the plan, or if they're paying a portion because you're not doing 100% coverage, that's coming through payroll. So they're very tied in. So my strong advice is to do it through the payroll provider, particularly for a small company, because it's just not worth
just added complexity.
Yeah, it's just added complexity that you don't need. Once you have multiple locations and people with all kinds of problems and this and you know, you also it starts to become expensive and you care about costs and all these things because you have a lot of people, that is when you kind of engage a broker or consultant and probably don't use the payroll version of this.
Gotcha. But you still engage a broker as opposed to negotiating with the healthcare players yourself.
You never really can do that. As you get bigger, you can do what's called self-insured and basically set up your own risk pool as you have more. I mean, that's like at 1,000 people, so not as relevant for most people. But yeah, the way insurance is just not one of those things that the regulation is such that you cannot buy direct. Like you cannot go to anthem.com and buy it. You probably, they might refer you to a broker, but you cannot buy it directly from them.
Interesting.
Yeah, where you can buy insurance directly from the government site
on a consumer basis.
On a consumer basis, if you're unemployed or self-employed or you don't work at a company that offers health insurance, and that was part of the Affordable Care Act is creating these, I forget what they call it,
the exchanges.
Yes, thank you. So yeah, so I think the other topic that comes up in benefits is sort of the, you could call them the additional coverages. So I would say dental and vision are sort of considered standard. So if you don't offer dental and vision, people will ask questions. Dental, you know, typically two cleanings a year are covered and some procedures are covered. Vision, they're giving you some coverage for an annual eye exam plus some credit to glasses or contacts. So those are, and those tend to be really cheap. The what costs a lot of money is the health plan. Then there's all these things that are like supplemental or additive, things like long-term care, disability, accidental disability and dismemberment or something, AD&D, it's called. You have, those are called voluntary benefits. They include life insurance. They include critical care insurance, like if you get cancer. I think those are nice to haves, but I wouldn't focus on them early, especially if you have a younger employee base.
Right.
I think that you're more likely to find benefits. You're more likely to get employees engaged by offering something like commuter benefits, or which is sort of like pre-tax contributions to their transportation, or for offering food in the office, or offering even something around a gym membership or student loan assistance. All those things are going to resonate with a younger employee base more than critical care and sort of these long like things that tend to affect an older employee base. So I think you have to kind of know your employees. That's what I would say. If your employee base is older, you know, student loans may be less relevant. Gym may be less relevant. I mean, not that older people don't go to the gym. They do, but it depends on what's going to be the most added value benefit.
So what do the brokers actually do?
So the value of a broker, so just to be clear, you're always buying through a broker, even if you're buying like through a Zenefits or Gusto or Rippling, right? They're just an online broker, but they're still the broker. But I think the value of a broker, and I have seen it, is when things are confusing in the healthcare ecosystem, which they are, you sort of have someone to call, which does comfort employees. So for me, you know, our CEO one time was in New York, had an issue. We have a California insurance plan, there's some sort of crossover. And it was nice to be able to call someone and say, hey, you know, my CEO is in New York, has a problem. What does he do? And I think if you're using an online software platform, there tends to be less service there versus a broker that you're calling day to day. The downside of the broker is just, and it's, you know, a little bit, as I mentioned, it's not as integrated with your payroll. So you're kind of like always updating your broker on who joined recently. Like, you know, you have to tell them, hey, this person joined, add them to benefits. And so it becomes an administrative burden if you're adding a lot of people and you're a busy CFO, got a million things, and, you know, HR is kind of your side job. So I think that's the downside. But what the broker's doing, I guess I didn't really answer your question. What the broker's doing is they're consulting and advising you on what plans to pick. They're bidding out your company. They'll ask for like an employee census. They'll say, okay, based on your company's, your demographics of your company, this is what your pricing is in what's called the small group market. So that's under 50 employees. They're going to help you, you know, coordinate between those plans, decide, and then they're also that consultative service. If anything goes wrong, you can call and ask them questions. So they don't do that much. They do some work around the renewal, and then they're sort of like someone you can call if you have questions.
All right, Michael, thanks so much for coming on to talk about benefits.
Thank you.